This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com and your host with the most. Welcome to the smartest, funniest, what else? How else would you describe this podcast?
Real, genuinist,
COVID-proof.
COVID-proof, like relegation-proof.
Cannon fodder.
Joining me, Mr. Dan Rogers from the villaunderground.com. Welcome, sir.
Good to be back.
A great return.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chris Bird.
Hello.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. How have you been, Mr. Rogers? It's been a few weeks.
Well, you know, I keep busy. My professional life has kept me very busy with COVID, but even though that now I only wear tracksuits, frequent supermarkets in long two-hour queues in order that I can buy just beer. In my personal life, when I retreat into the Villa Underground bunker, I have become a neighbourhood voyeur, so I've got full notes on all of my neighbours now. But I'm back to discuss the Villaverse.
Have you ordered some binoculars from Amazon Prime yet?
Yes, I've got some good peeper binoculars.
Jesus Christ, why do we have him on the show?
For this content.
You work with the NHS or with them or in them?
Yeah, with them, yeah.
So what's the situation from your experience?
My experience, is this my first serious segment on the show? I think it possibly is. My experience has been one of, I think, since January. Knowing that this was pretty serious and you sort of think that it's going to be, you don't want to be prophet of doom with anyone, but then as things started to ramp up, I think overseas, the realization that it was on our shores, and I was talking off air to Chris, I think that what is readily lost in this is the sheer scale, because the numbers, when they get to the type of figures that we're seeing at the moment, where are we now, the 26th of April when we're recording this, are massive numbers, and I think that the impact on our society over the last 3 months has been huge. But what's going to happen going forward is even more remarkable. Really, it's been very, very difficult professionally for me recently.
Yeah, I mean we will talk about the context of this and how it applies to football and what people have kind of overlooked, because there is that sense that, you know, click of the fingers, we're up and running, football starts again, but it's not going to be as simple as that. I mean, just quickly, in a Birmingham context, a lot of people have been talking about the Nightingale Hospital not being used yet, but the Nightingale Hospital is not somewhere where you want to end up, put it that way. It's like something out of the Walking Dead or Fear of the Walking Dead or whatever. It's like that kind of base camp.
Well, it's an overflow setting that is all of the Nightingales are, and I think that People might readily say that that's a huge thing that's been constructed, it's not been using. I suppose on the one hand, it proves that they've managed to control the surge within the hospitals. But the big worry for me is that it hasn't been used, and there's lots of issues, should we say, in the community of people who might not have got there. So that's, yeah, I think, something that we'll see in the weeks and months ahead.
Yeah, anyway, let's crack on. How are you, Chris, before we move on?
I'm very well. Making music. Slightly browner than I was a week ago, so...
Oh, you've been getting out and about and getting your an Andrew Ridgely tan on the go.
Yeah, man, I'm getting 10,000 steps a day.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that when you said that.
I'm very fortunate. Thank God for having a garden and green space. I've got a golf course out the back of my house.
All right, so check you out.
Look at this. How the other half live.
Yeah, I know.
Do you know what? And I'm kind of not missing watching Villa implode. It's been kind of relaxing.
Right, let's talk about Villa imploding. Coming up in the show, we have, the latest news from Villa, where they have actually managed to avoid furloughing staff, with players agreeing to 25% deferment of their wages for the next 4 months. We'll discuss that and what's happening across the Premier League in terms of the principle of, you know, pay cuts, etc. Also, we'll look at the situation where contracts run out in June, and Villa aren't actually hit that bad, but we'll look at what's been happening in that sense anyway. There's not that many players up for renewal anyway. The 3 points will take us to the controversial, maybe, Newcastle potential buyout by the Saudis. Also, this concept of having cardboard cutout fans to try to create some kind of atmosphere in these ghost games that potentially will happen. And then we'll get into a bigger, wider debate on the future of the 2020-21 season, from voiding it, trying to continue the practicalities of that, and also the concept of points per game basis, which doesn't end well for Villa. We'll look around what other countries are doing with their leagues, and then we've got a couple of new segments. Normally we'd put them in the show, but we'll get the serious stuff out and then we'll finish on a lighter note. Stealing it from Pitchfork magazine, they're underrated and overrated. We will do underrated, overrated, where we will discuss every show 3 Aston Villa players and discuss whether they're underrated or overrated. And we're talking about Villa players from yesteryear, across the board, all kinds of, from far back, from the obscure to the loved, to the ones on the borderline, to the Nigel Rio Cokers of this world. And also we will discuss, lots of people call Villa players legends. All you have to do is, you know, put on a Villa kit and suddenly you are a legend on Twitter. So we'll, in a quicker end of podcast segment, we will discuss, well, is it harsh saying legend or fraud? We're looking for a running title here. Legend and fraud's probably a bit harsh, but we will grade celebrated players and whether they're a legend or not, or whether they're just a hero or a cult favourite.
Or just a fable.
But shall we name who? We've got to go with a player that I want to throw up first. We'll go for Martin Larsson first of all. But anyway, hang in there for that. That's at the end of the show.
Chris, David Unsworth would have been a fable, I suppose. I was thinking about it.
I'm kind of looking forward to the free-form riffing of underrated or overrated, but we'll get to that in a second. Right, first of all, Villa news. So they took the time, but I think the announcement by Christian Purslow, the statement essentially saying 25%, pay deferment of first-term players, coaches, staff, which leads to no furloughing of non-playing staff, which is the end game here. I think they didn't rush into it because, A, this is an ever-changing scenario, so we still don't know when the league's going to kick off. Obviously, Christian Purslow's had meetings with the Premier League on pretty much a weekly basis, and they're still none the wiser. So it is hard to plan financially in that respect, because you've got no idea what's going to be coming in and whether this season's going to finish or void or whatever the conclusion is. So I think there's no need to rush into it. I mean, other clubs have, and they got shot down through, you know, bad PR. Your Liverpools of this world, Spurs, Bournemouth, all backtracked after they elected to furlough their non-playing staff. I mean, what was your initial reaction before we get into the morality of it all? Mr. Rogers.
From a Villa point of view, I think it's a good statement. I think the wisdom was sitting tight, and I think just seeing how the landscape, not just in terms of football, I don't think, but how it's played out generally, because it's such a new concept anyway. Yeah. And actually, by sitting tight, that, you know, we'll talk about morality in some detail, I guess, in a moment. But some of the in a sector awash with money. You know, I know that it has the propensity to cause financial problems for lower league clubs and even some other teams. This is an obvious, easy win on the PR side as well.
Yeah, because this, I mean, the situation, and it's got a bit cloudy, and that's mainly because of the PFA, the Professional Footballers Association, who have resisted this notion that players should be revoking on their contractual, payments that they are contractually
that's a huge
obliged to have.
Disconnect, isn't it, with reality? I think it shows you at that end of football.
And so their excuse was, well, if players take a pay cut, that would be less tax money going to the government, so less money to the NHS. First of all, this tax money of football players does not go directly to the NHS. It goes to the government pot. So they're trying to use that as a like a little PR diverting mechanism. Secondly, I was under this impression that they would get paid. The tax money goes to the tax man. And then after, in their take-home pay, then they make a donation back to their club. Because this is a football issue. This is not a freeing up money for the NHS. I mean, Captain Tom's done a very good job sorting that one out. And loads of other people have been raising money all across the country.
Yeah.
So the football players' response to this pressure, and you know, the Premier League put the pressure on, the government put the pressure on, was to say, oh, we've set up this charity. We're not saying how much money it's raising. And it was very vague, and players didn't have to commit any money if they didn't want to. And their excuse for not taking a pay cut was, oh, well, we're going to be donating money to, the NHS or, you know, frontline charities. Well, it was never about the NHS. This is about protecting football, where you're in a situation where you have these multi-million pound businesses paying ridiculous money to people who are doing fuck all at this moment in time and are redundant as having any use to society in this situation. And, you know, I'm saying that with harsh words. And they're paying them five figures a week. And then they're crawling to the government to furlough non-playing staff, which just seems ridiculous and embarrassing.
It's unethical. And it's, I think, just to reiterate my point, really, that I think it shows you that at the top end of the game, because what we're talking about from a Premier League level, this fully underlines for me that disconnect between how grossly overpaid some of these footballers are. And in amongst them, I'm sure there will be plenty of players who will recognise what that's about, exactly as you've just said. But I'm not saying they shouldn't have a choice, but it's not a hard, for me, it's not a hard decision to make that you are vastly wealthy individuals. And I find it baffling that even now, as we're talking at the end of April, the influential players haven't managed to steward a common ground on this. I'm astonished that, for instance, that the 25% that Villa have arrived at isn't the norm.
Yeah, I mean, Chelsea are still in discussions with it. Arsenal, I think they actually had a pay cut of 12.5%, and it was quite interesting reading that article. I think it was in The Athletic.
I read that today.
That bit where there's an anonymous player, and he's saying, well, some players get it, but a lot of players don't get it. And, you know, these are the players that they're very, very wealthy people. And, you know, they're dropping 15 grand in a club to have a VIP table and all that shit. And yet they're a tight arseholes. You know, they're the guys that you go out, you know, it's the equivalent of going on an office meal or, you know, your group of 10 friends. And instead of people just like throwing in money and saying, yeah, split it 10 ways, they're actually working out how much they individually had. And,
well, that's a big fuck you to the physio, to the catering, to the kit man, to the academies, and the things that have actually got them there and sustain their pathetic existences.
I mean, the example of Arsenal that was used was, of course, even the disparity in the changing room. You know, you'll have some players who are like first, second year sort of pros who've just broke into the first team who aren't earning what someone like Mesut Ozil earns in a week in a year. That's the, you know, in a club, you know, when they're paying players 200-300 grand a week, it's not a problem as much for Villa, because I would imagine the sort of the wage ranges are much closer together at Villa, because we haven't got to that point of playing people hundred grand a week plus yet. I'm sure you'll have people like Grealish, etc., are not far off, but they won't be into a six-figure number anybody on that wage bill. So it's not quite the same level. But in Arsenal or, you know, somewhere like Chelsea, you know, United's, you know, City,
but some of the reactions that article threw up were quite interesting. Like some of the players going, well, it's my money. You know, who are you? You know, who are you to tell me what to do with it? And without seeing the whole context of the situation, I mean, this isn't about football. This is about kind of society and societal principles of like, this is your team. This is your non-playing staff and the club. I mean, I understand this situation that some of our ex-players have said, like, if you're furloughing staff or you're asking them to take a cut and then suddenly in the next transfer window you're spending like 50, 60 million on a player, then there's an issue there.
And it's also players taking pay, you know, wage deferrals and them going, well, say for the sake of 4 months. Well, the players know they're going to get that money at some point anyway, but it's what are the club doing with that pot of money in the meantime?
They're covering, obviously, the staff who aren't working there. But yeah, there is that. You don't want your clubs to be taking advantage of this situation if players say, I mean, my bottom line is, you know, football players shouldn't get paid the amount of money they're getting paid. And obviously, it's the industry creates its own money and, you know, fair enough. But this pandemic shows you the situation of how unbalanced society is, essentially. And can football learn from this? Can they do anything? But I mean, I wouldn't imagine clubs will be throwing around silly money in the next transfer window if there ever is one.
It shows you how inequitable it is. And I think that I guess I'm sort of repeating myself, but football is as we've said many times on this podcast over the years, is constantly on the drift from the average person who arrives and sits in the stand and and looks at these players who are, at the end of the day, also human beings. They're not gods.
Yeah.
And I think it's this sense of entitlement that football has created around itself that, you know, these are unprecedented times. And for these exorbitantly wealthy individuals who, at the start or the end of their careers, either they're wealthy or they stand to be very, very wealthy. They can't see that. That's bizarre to me.
And if they can't survive, you know, if you're talking about a guy who's on 100 grand a week and he's having to take even a 25% pay reduction, you're thinking, if you're relying on 100 grand a week to fulfill a lifestyle, you are living a very unsustainable life. And you're going to end up like, there's a huge percentage of like NFL players in the States who finish their career and are bankrupt. If you're living a life where you need 100 grand a week, you're going to be very, very big trouble.
Well,
when
the
you
thing
retire.
Is, nobody needs it. And there's this disparity now. I mean, you know, today, if you met one of the 1982 European Cup winning Aston Villa players. You can have a pint with them, no problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they are like just normal folk, but they won't even get mentioned in any, let's say, this current generation. You know, who's your best Villa 11? Or, you know, they never get called legends. They're almost forgotten where they're the only true legends, but they're actually down-to-earth people. And people now getting paid 40, 50, 60,000 a week are just, I mean, they're bang average players as well and completely out of touch. And some of them don't get what's happening. And this article is pretty good in terms of shining a light on that. But it'll be interesting to see where we all stand in 4 months' time. I don't know whether that deferment 4 months and then review opens up the potential for the players to actually, for that 25% to be a cut in essence or what happens. But Norwich, interestingly, have dug in and they say, well, you know, that's the way it has to go because, you know, these are our outgoings and we're in the shit. But, you know, they should get their players to stump up.
I mean, fortunately for most Premier League sides, us, you know, very much included in that, they have very cash-rich owners who can sign a cheque and cover all the non-playing staff's wages relatively
And they
easily.
Should, by the way. They should do that.
And should.
You read between the lines and that's what Perslow's kind of insinuating. He said you should, you know, doff your cap
there's
to
a moral,
the new owners.
There's a moral line here that, you know, I mean, that our two owners, for instance, haven't been involved with the club very long in any sense, but they are multi, I mean, one of them's a multi-billionaire.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I think between them, they're the fifth richest ownership in the Premier League. And that's including, if you count the new, the Saudi regime at Newcastle.
Yeah. Well, it hasn't been signed off yet, though, has it? We'll get on to that in a minute anyway. We will see what happens. But in terms of PR and making the fan base happy, I think Villa have made so far so good in terms of that statement.
Yeah, considering they dropped a few own goals, didn't they, this side of Christmas, PR-wise? And I think even, you know, having the NHS in and setting up the it's a maternity unit, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say that's next point. I mean, other clubs have done it. I mean, like Chelsea have opened up their stadium. I mean, Burton were doing the maternity thing. They've been doing it a few weeks. So it was good to see Villa actually do that and link up with the, what's the NHS trust in that area?
Birmingham Sandwell.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. I mean, that's another good move. And, you know, as it should be, if you want to realistically be considered part of the community, they need to act like it because they are obviously one of the big guns and one of the big employees in the area as well. Mm-hmm. Moving on to player matters, Keenan Davis. Is this totally confirmed that he's been given a one-season extension?
I think the club have exercised their option, haven't they? Whether or not it's been signed is another matter.
Because when you read the Birmingham Mail, their source is the Football Insider, which is the biggest piece of shitty clickbait you've ever seen. And I can't believe something that would consider itself a newspaper would use the Football Insider clickbait website as their source.
Wow. But,
That's the clickbait leading the clickbait.
Leading the clickbait. It's in the valley of the blind, the one-eyed man is king.
To the bottom, isn't it? That Jesus.
It puts me off running a Villa website. I don't want to have anything to do with that kind of landscape. Mm. But we soldier on. Anyway, Keenan Davis. Let's hypothetically say. Well, the situation is his contract runs out in June the 30th. Villa luckily aren't in the they're not hamstrung really by...
He's normally hamstrung.
Well, exactly. But so they haven't got any like big hitters up for contract renewal. You've got Callum O'Hare. I mean, no biggie there. Green hasn't really proved himself yet. Callum O'Hare really should be pulling up trees if he wants to be considered a Premier League player. So, I mean, all these players could go, I would say.
Yeah, the biggest of the batch is probably James Chester, but has he run his course at Villa? Quite possibly.
You know, considering he's not 100% fit, he's, you know, fifth ranked centre-back. I mean, if he's fit, I would still wager he's currently may have worth because Hawes and I forget these players' names. It's been
Konsa?
So long.
Who?
Hawes and Konsa. Hawes and Konsa, obviously, as they proved, they are not the finished article just yet. Mm. But yeah, Chester, I mean, he's off-ski. And I think Sarcic probably might get a little extension. But I think the thinking with the Keenan Davis one is just give him a year. It's almost like a trial of fitness, is it not?
And we need a Gary Gardner replacement, don't we? We need someone who's...
But Keenan Davis has potential.
He does.
I like him.
Yeah, he's done
man.
Enough to be Such to be one of, I mean, I should, you know, I want to say one of our four strikers, but we haven't actually got four strikers. But he's, you know, definitely one of our squad of strikers. But it's just those, you know, his injury issues. And I think this is one, normally you'd give him a new contract 3 years or whatever because of his age.
Yeah.
But I think it is a 1 year trial of his fitness. And there is also, if Villa do get relegated, then he's tailor made for the championship. Mm-hmm. And you just give him a new contract to cover that as well. So that makes a lot of sense. But apart from that, there's no real big... Villa are kind of lucky in that respect that this pandemic and the way it's going to mess up this season and next doesn't really get complicated in terms of contracts.
Oh, this will become a nightmare for many clubs, I think. Who, you know,
especially lower down.
Especially lower down.
Yeah, and clubs that are sort of propped up by the loan system. Mm. You know, we could probably pretty happily get rid of our loan players and get them off the wage bill. But some clubs, you know, they're sort of three or four best players are potentially loaned from bigger clubs.
Right, let's get into the 3 points. First point, Newcastle. Finally, there's light at the end of the tunnel. I can't remember the name of the woman who's been trying to sort this Saudi deal. She's been acting as what's a polite word to call this?
Intermediary.
The intermediary. It's bringing the horse to the water. It finally seems to have happened.
Camel to the water.
Camel to the water in this case. And it's the Premier League seem to be like, well, we'll just check the paperwork and we'll have you up and running. No problems there. Well, others, I mean, Qatar obviously got vested interest rivalry there. But correct me if I'm wrong, but Saudi Arabia have been broadcasting Premier League games illegally for the last few years, have they not?
Yep.
And that's not even including their human rights record, et cetera, et cetera.
Nope.
Which is absolutely in the gutter, by the way.
Yeah, I mean... There was a lot of similar discussions when, is it called sports washing? It's like a play on whitewashing.
Mm.
Yeah, you try and sort of make a regime look better than they actually are by doing something essentially legitimate.
Like Anthony Joshua's fight, first of all, caused a lot of issues. And it's funny looking at what Anthony Joshua was saying and also the press that were all invited to stay at five-star hotels.
Mm-hmm.
And the hoo-ha was, you know, human rights, blah, blah, blah. And when, well, you know, I've had a great time so far since, you know, I can only speak from first-hand experience. Yeah, it's because you're in a five-star hotel and living, you know, living the good life. And suddenly that kind of moral principle seems to fade away a little bit. And, you know, Anthony Joshua obviously treated like a king when he's over there. And he said, well, first-hand experience, all fine. But this isn't really the kind of point. But, yeah, I mean...
You can't...
Premier League isn't really a bastion of what's right and what's wrong, so they'll just say, yeah, no problems there.
Well, the Premier League is morally bankrupt and has been for a number of years now, so it's like, they're just like, you got the money? Yeah, great. Okay,
Newcastle fans, you know, they're going from one person that they perceive as evil and they'll just, you know, they're just like, they're running away from him and they get round the corner, ah, saviour, and it's like, oh, well, we don't care, you know, you've got lots of money, you know, we'll overlook whatever the issue is here. And then what they do, Newcastle fans, would just start, it's that tribal thing where if your club is doing wrong, you'll just still defend them to the death.
And I think that's the point, isn't it? That Saudi is it's transforming no matter what, in a fashion. I think it's coming from what we would consider in the West to be the Dark Ages, and there's some very distasteful things that have happened there. And it depends where you get your news, doesn't it, I suppose, and what you believe and what you don't believe. From a football perspective, I think it's the delusion that we have as fans that perhaps that there's any sort of, and what would we even been calling under Dr. Tony, is that the fit and proper, isn't it? That, you know, it doesn't exist. Either it can't exist because the people fronting these things are, what's the word, unauditable is the polite way. And the other thing is that the Premier League, no matter what, and we've been talking about it already, is absolutely beguiled by money. And if money's put up, as you said, clubs and supporters, as we would if we were being bought out in a situation like Newcastle have been in, you want change, don't you? And you almost put the blinkers up and go, well.
It's like, well, I mean, just look at the recon and Dr. Tony. I mean, not many of us were raising questions. But, you know, when we, you know, we did, I wrote numerous articles of like, why is China suddenly interested in Premier League? Why is this? What's this guy doing? And then doing a bit of digging and finding out that he'd already been to XYZ club. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is all on my old man said website. And then I saw that other people on, you know, on Twitter were questioning it. And then they get accused of being xenophobic and racist. And it's like, this is the typical football fan tribalism defending, because they can't bear to dig deep, and they rather bury their head in the sand or just look away.
Well, exactly. And I think we, you know, we are some of our quarters of our fan base. You have to separate the football from actually who are these people, you know. That just going back to when Villa were being taken over, there were some very dubious characters involved with the previous regime. You know, Samuelson was one that we put the magnifying glass over. And I think just to round off my point, I suppose, with the Saudi thing, is this any coincidence when you line it up against the Chinese one, that Saudis, this is a time when they were trying to push tourism, albeit COVID's put paid to that, but they're starting to open up to the West, trying to project a more progressive, modernist culture. And it all comes down to money for me.
Well, that's what it's all about anyway. Point number two, Barcelona are offering up the naming rights to the Nou Camp, and the money... Is it going to go to health service or just frontline, or is there any specific outlet?
I don't know if it's just to help pay for the staff.
So
I mean, I know the players have taken quite hefty pay cuts, haven't they, at Barca, and you know, been very open about it. They were one of the first clubs to do it, actually, in European football.
Because I thought the initiative was to you know, for the good of fighting.
Yeah,
the
I believe
pandemic.
So. In the end.
I mean, the only recently they gave up their, because they were infamous for not having a shirt sponsor, but Qatar Airlines paid to that.
Well, they had foundations, didn't they, before as well? They had like UNICEF and things like that, and then Qatar, obviously, as they have done in that part of the world.
There's a story going on. I think the BBC or somebody interviewed Mike Tyson, allegedly has a cannabis company. And there's a few people have invested in cannabis because of when it eventually gets legalized, which is meant to be round the corner, then obviously stocks will go up and it will be kind of a boom situation. And Mike Tyson...
Well, and hemp
yeah,
as
no,
well.
Exactly, yeah,
exactly.
And Mike Tyson, his business partner in his cannabis company, I think it's Alki David, has said it would be an amazing idea for them to sponsor the Nur Camp. My company is a cannabis company, and Spain has a long tradition with the European Union, within the European Union, as being a leader or a liberal in the road towards legalization. So it's evolved quite naturally.
I think they should get sponsored by Old Spice.
Well, Kevin Keegan, wasn't it?
Mike
New Camp Old Spice, that would work.
Mike Tyson. I've interviewed Mike Tyson. Biggest ass I've ever seen, as in literally biggest ass. I had to take a picture of it when he walked away. Just, I've never seen a pair of trousers
as wide.
I think that was when he was obviously post fighting prime. But anyway, moving on swiftly. To point number three, and this plays relevant in terms of what happens, which we'll discuss later on. In Germany, they're calling it the ghost game. I think they had a ghost game. They had the first ghost game where, roughly translated, behind closed doors, Borussia Mönchengladbach have this initiative where you can purchase a cardboard cutout of you, life-size, weatherproof, plastic. So if it's a rains on the day, you'll be all right. You won't just kind of turn into pulp.
When the Villa Park acid bath rains down on you.
So for, I think it's €19, Gladbach fans can purchase this cardboard cutout, which will stand, I'm presuming, wherever they normally sit or stand.
So you've actually got to pay money to be yourself.
Yeah, it's beautiful, isn't it? Only football would manage to rinse a fan in another new novel way.
I don't know what to say about this. I kind of like it.
Does this mean I could watch games on telly from the comfort of my own home and just send my plastic figurine in winter games?
It's that beauty of, like, if you say you're at the game but you're not, you could just say, yeah, I was there, look, you know.
Here's a question for you. What facial expression would you settle on?
All you'd see on my face would be my fingers covering my eyes.
Chris?
Probably like a load of curry sauce around my mouth and a big pile of chips or something.
I think mine would just be a look of bewilderment.
What's that painting, The Scream?
Yeah, maybe me looking at my watch going,
But there's a lot of scope for a lot of fun there, I think.
Oh, definitely with a weatherproof plastic, because plastic, I mean, it lasts forever. So I think if you could get it installed permanently, you'd forever be your plastic corrugated version would have to live out its days.
One way of keeping my season ticket forever.
My lifetime season ticket.
It can be like a lifetime investment.
So, I mean, the idea is obviously to create some kind of atmosphere. I'm pretty sure if they're playing ghost games on TV, do you think they'll be pumping in fake atmosphere?
I hope so.
They should install, I don't know, give us little iPad faces so that we could shout and scream and real time.
You're not going to get that for €19 a shot.
Oh.
But I mean, like, sound on the TV, do you think they will put Atmos tracks on? Like when Villa are attacking, they'll have Villa song Atmos tracks.
Or when a Villa player misplaces a pass, you'll have everyone piling in on them. Oh, fuck off, Taylor. Fucking rubbish. Sort it out, Smith. Great. That'd be great fun.
But seriously, it's. I think they have to. Cause it's,
well, Man City
it's,
do that anyway, don't they? So.
Yeah, it's going to be a bit of a...
I don't know.
Soulless thing, but I'm not into this ghost game.
I'm not sure about any of this. No,
football is for the fans. If you can't get the fans there, fuck.
Because the weird thing about, just away from the Borussia, is that they're thinking about neutral venues, including training pitches, aren't they? If they were to resume competitive
and have them in almost like camps, aren't they? Like isolated.
We'll get into this. We'll get into this in the main section. Just first of all, I just want to say, before we get into that, I just want to say a big thank you very much to the My Old Man Said patrons for sticking with us through this tricky period, especially thanks to Steve Ward and Richard Newey for signing up recently as a patron. Please do, if you want to support the show and get access to extra podcasts, there's been a couple in the last week, which actually were pretty good, in my humble opinion. where we looked at Gregory's miracle transition when he managed to win 9 out of the last 11 games of the season that Brian Little started off as the manager. But anyway, if you want to get access to that, please do check out myomanshead.com and click on the Patreon option there for more details. Also, you will get discount codes for merchandise and be able to enter for Mum's Rewards as well.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Oh, right. Cracking on. Future of the 2019/20 season.
Oh, this is going to trigger me.
Now, I'm on the National Council of the Football Supporters Association, so I've been getting a few emails because the two guys there are on the FA committee or council, let's call it council. So they were involved in discussions about the National League, which is essentially the non-league, and how they were going to end the season. And the FA put across 3 alternatives, which is pretty much the blueprint for what all leagues are looking at. One is to finish the season by any means possible, so basically keeping it open. This creates a problem where you potentially back into the 2021 season and completely messes that up, and that might even back into the season after that. You're also looking at ghost games behind closed doors, as we just mentioned there. And the pros are, you get to actually end that season and clubs will be champions, relegated, and it's business as usual in that sense. The second option is just avoid the season. The shit's gone down. Sorry, but that's it. We start again. This obviously buys you, releases the pressure in terms of the contracts that we just mentioned, June 30th sorted. The prospect you could have a proper transfer window and you can actually start planning for 2021 in a more rational fashion, knowing that that's not going to be compromised as much. The cons are poor old Liverpool, poor old Aston Villa and those fans who wanted to return to the Championship. The only question is, who do you choose for Europe next season? Mm. But, that's not really a big issue. You could judge that on where teams have finished in the void table. And then the third potential offering solution is to end the season with a points per game basis, which doesn't work out well for Villa, but let's approach this with a non-biased viewpoint. So this means it's a bit like voiding the season. You actually, it's over. You don't impinge into the 2021 unless the pandemic does that for us. You have a finality. It's a bit like cricket. What's the Duckworth?
Yeah, Duckworth-Lewis.
Duckworth-Lewis situation, which I never thought that was a...
No.
Not a great solution for cricket.
That works for individual games.
Mm. Yeah.
It doesn't work for a whole season. There's so many other things that it factors in.
Yeah, anyway, so out of those three situations, at the moment, the Dutch, Belgium were the first to say, right, that's it, fuck it. Mm. They were in a situation where normally they have playoffs, so the top team, I think I mentioned this on the previous podcast, Bruges were like 15 points clear with one game to go. So they had mathematically finished top. So obviously you go into a playoff normally, but if you wanted to finish that season, you could make them the number one, the winners, the title winners, you're foregoing the playoffs. But you're looking at that table, mathematically, they've got it. Liverpool aren't in that position. Sport needs finality. I mean, we've used the example, like if the virus happened and Liverpool had played the first leg against Barcelona and lost 3-0, as they did, and then you got to start the Champions League again and say, well, we haven't got time for that second leg, let's just go straight to the semis. Most people would say, well, that game, you know, Liverpool are 3-0 down, there's no way they get that back against Barcelona, but they did. So, you know, this is sport, this is why we're all here. Holland, they've gone straight in and said, fuck it, void as well.
Yeah.
And only the Champions League place is really to be decided. Germany are talking ghost games. And I mean, they've dealt with this pandemic better than, you know, this country, for example. Definitely, the, you know, in terms of death ratio is way, way down. You look at those figures and you think, how?
Mm.
On the news, it's always a topic. But there is, I'm like in Switzerland and Sweden. Sweden have penciled in the 14th of June as a starting date. And I think, you know, places like Sweden and Switzerland are just, people are just more socially aware. They're more responsible as well.
I think more responsible. And I think that when you look at the Germans' approach to, they moved very early in January in the mass testing. And the only interesting thing about the ghost games and I'm just looking at the show notes we've got here, which is Gitterspiele concept, which is behind game behind closed doors. Yeah. As I understand it, the strange thing about Germany as a setup is that they've got regional disagreement as to how to reduce the lockdown. So it's a bit of a reverse situation here, that the regions in the UK listen to what London or Westminster says, and the Germans, I think, are trying to suppress the regions at the moment from going too soon on this.
Yeah.
So, but the Germans have resisted these sorts of things in terms of the footballing context. We covered it recently, didn't we?
Yeah, they have I think it's called the Fanzenen Deutschlands, which is a nationwide union of ultra groups, and they've criticized, I mean, they're no stranger to like criticizing Germans' football business model, even though over here we think, you know, this 51 plus one is the utopian. But they've rejected this what's it called, the Gitterspiel,
ghost.
Yeah,
it's game, behind closed doors is what it translates to.
And they've said it's an insult to society, and in particular to those fighting COVID-19 on a daily basis. Professional football has long been sick and should still be in quarantine.
Mm. I think this is the reaction that you could get in the UK if the Premier League were to try and find this halfway house. We're creeping back into this. Is this a moral and ethical and a medical-based decision, or is it about kickstarting the financial machine that drives the Premier League?
It's completely all about that, because they have contracts, you know, with the TV companies that they want to uphold.
So they should say that. They should say
it's TV and gambling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with sport.
They should say it.
That's it's very easy to use the sporting integrity line in all of this. But you look at the three countries with the biggest leagues that are trying to get back playing as soon as they can, Italy, Spain and Great Britain. And they're the three countries that have probably been hit the hardest.
I'm tiring, as I'm sure many are, of the doublespeak, really, because we get the spillover from the political side to the, you know, trying to keep it purely in footballing terms. But for me, I think that, there was the 3,000 fans who travelled for the Liverpool Atletico game, that you think if that happened now, that no one in their right mind would think that was a sensible thing to do, the whole Cheltenham thing.
I mean, that's just, people go, oh, but hindsight. When I heard about Cheltenham at the time, I couldn't believe what was happening.
No.
When I hear Boris Johnson talking about shaking hands with everybody, and you just think, what's going on here? Yeah. This, you know, don't they know?
Well, it's irrational,
what a pandemic is.
And I think that the real huge difference, as I've seen of it, is that it not just... It genuinely is impacting upon people's lives. And if you don't lose someone directly, you'll lose someone indirectly. And if you don't pass away from this, you'll have a terrible illness that will cause you considerable, you know, and your loved ones some serious harm. And for me, that football has to pause until a higher authority tells them otherwise, frankly. I'm not interested in seeing Villa play ghost games. I'm not interested in seeing this progress if it means that we're, you know, I want to sit in the hot end like anyone, but not if there's risk.
Yeah, if tomorrow they said, all right, yeah, well, we're going to go back to the herd immunity idea. And
it's bonkers, absolutely bonkers.
If you want to go to Villa Park next weekend, you won't see me there. See you later.
No.
And, you know, I'd probably turn my back on football.
Well, this is where I wouldn't want to get drawn into it's what we were talking about earlier, really, that it's dangerous because it can put a tribalism between core groups of fans of, you know, we want football back at all costs. But it mustn't blinker us to the fact that this is an unprecedented time where there's genuine risk to human life.
We're talking about a virus that has us all locked down. Mm. I mean, there's a reason for that. There's also, you're talking about a virus that, A, there's no cure. No. B, we don't know if you've had it like other illnesses. That means you're immune to it. Mm. There seems to be no proof of that, as people are getting it again. And you don't know what the long-term effects are, and there's a lot still to be learned from this. And here we are.
We're very early in this.
Very early.
We're not, we're nowhere near any what you'd call the back end stuff yet. We are still in peak. So in terms of football, it simply isn't a priority for people. Or it can't be a priority, be it morally. And to be honest, for most people, financially, you know, a lot of people are losing jobs, have been furloughed, things like season tickets. This is not a priority in the same way that going on holiday, sitting on a beach, it's not a priority. I can only comment on my industry. In music, you've got an entire summer, an entire industry just vanished. Football is still there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you won't be getting people going to concerts potentially any time before Christmas.
No.
Because that's a relatively smaller gathering. You know, things like the festival season has gone. And all of the workers that go with that.
Mm.
The medium-sized gigs, sort of arenas and academy-sized stuff, no one will be doing that. You know, football has to be in that, you know, in terms of government, it's in the culture, media and sport bracket. They're all in the same thing. It just seems that the Premier League, as always, seems to think it's got a fucking law to itself. It's like, no, we're the priority. It's like, oh, we have to raise the spirits of the country.
And
it's
the spin, yeah, that's the spin, isn't it?
It's bullshit, because it's like, dude, will sitting on YouTube and watching Villa make my spirits any better? I don't give a fuck.
Well, that's the proof to me that the drive is, as David rightly said, that's the drive to get the TV money.
It's TV and get people gambling.
There's some bigger... Yeah.
And if you're playing games in a stadium, we know full well, now I won't be going anywhere near it, but there will be some people who will happily stand outside and shout through the gates, come on the Villa, and they'll see that. So remember that day where we all stood outside the Villa because we weren't allowed in? Fucking nonsense.
This requires a real, I think, it requires one of the big leagues to actually stand up and say, you know, to break ranks from that, I think. And I'm surprised the Bundesliga hasn't taken the opportunity to do that, to be honest, being a little bit ahead of us. La Liga, I've always thought, is, you know, is
but
controlled.
I think the situation is these are multi-million pound contracts. They have to try to honour in some way.
Well, they need to force majeure, isn't it, at the end of the day? Yeah. And for me, I think that they risk doing greater harm, that if they rush this back, and even if they rush it back to congregated gatherings, that
the second wave, yeah.
Well, the top end of these divisions will see congregations of what, 30,000 plus people on average, right up to some of the larger stadiums, which are what, 80, you know. I think people would be reluctant to do it, but I think tribalism is that, fantastic, the football's back on, it's safe to do it. And that's why so many people went to Cheltenham, because they perceived it was safe to do it. Well, this is the situation, I suppose, we can go, hindsight is 20,000 people, not just because of Cheltenham and things like that, but because of community transmission, are dead. And that's a lie.
And rising daily.
Yeah.
3,000 fans from Madrid. And we're looking at Spain at that time was in lockdown.
Spain Madrid particularly, and the regions around it have had an absolutely horrendous time.
And so how many of those, you know, let's say knocking on 300 people that have died in Liverpool hospitals, obviously it's speculation, but how many of those would have been linked to those 3,000 that came over? I think one of the government minister said, oh, that's an interesting hypothesis, but, well, come on, you got 3,000 people coming from somewhere that's in a lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was all driven, oh, we've got to fulfill this fixture, you know, money, 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 money. Nobody's thinking about health. Nobody's thinking about the knock-on effects and how that kind of permutates through wherever, you know, these people are getting off in London, they're getting off at, you know, Liverpool Airport, Manchester Airport.
Well, I mean,
isn't hindsight, you know. No. It's like, how is this game going ahead?
I mean, the other hat that I wear is that I'm always very mindful of how these things can be viewed when the dust settles, if you like. And there's already talk of the NHS being massively exposed in terms of liability for its lack of protective equipment for the staff. You know, I do think that when the dust settles on this, and if there's genuine harm that can be attributed, the lawyers will be coming. And I think, I dare say, the law could be coming for some of these people, because who was taking such reckless decisions, if you like, when at that time, I think the facts were there for all to see.
The government knew in 2016.
They knew enough.
That they knew that they weren't ready for a pandemic because that was they were meant to be testing for you know their propensity to tackle a pandemic. And what was the quote? So I think the quote was, "Ha ha ha! We just better hope we don't get a pandemic because we'll be fucked."
Absolutely, we are.
Right, you got three alternatives: the future of this 2019/20 season. So, which one are you going for? Do you want me to go through them again? First, finish the season by any means. Let it roll on. Let it roll on. Second, just void it. Full stop. And third one, points per game basis. Chris?
Void it.
Dan?
Without doubt, void it.
Yeah, I'm totally.
And I might add, that isn't simply from my Villa hat.
No.
You know, because every club has their own, you know. And it's like, actually, if you can void it, I would still say, the reality is Liverpool would have won it. By all means, give them the title, fine, because they were going to achieve it. But
I'm void it.
Yeah, I'm void it.
But it's just not a priority. Football is not a priority.
Liverpool's situation, it's just unlucky.
Yeah,
it's exactly the same as someone like, and I've mentioned it numerous times in the last few weeks when we've spoken about someone like Leicester who have had an amazing season and would feel very hard done by to not get top four that they deserve. But you just think, do you know what? Sorry.
And by the way, you don't want to be really travelling around Europe next season anyway.
In terms of the thing about the bottom of the table, you look at Villa and if you're thinking that points per game and all that stuff, that's farcical. Absolutely farcical.
Well, that is your stupid Duckworth Lewis having
that's
the
nonsense.
Worst.
If you do that for football, that's just pointless because Villa are a game behind.
Well, the thing is, you're guessing, you're actually making a projection on, you know, if it panned out like that, well, why play any games? You know, why don't you just put it through an algorithm?
The league is a journey. You can have great finishes, and then there's that whole balance of playing home and away against good teams, bad teams, and that's obviously goes through the fixture list. So you could have played some team could have played all the easy teams away or at home, and they have a real tough fixture list coming up, or vice versa. It's all nuanced the whole week.
Yeah. And I think one of the things I would put in there is some of the financial implications that you could help certainly down a division is that you're going to have potentially, if you're not going to have any relegations, you've got a parachute pot that you can spread out between the Championship to soften the blow. Or for someone like a West Brom or a Leeds, when you're saying, well, do you know what? You're not going to get promoted and get the 170 million pot, but we can offer you the parachute money of a team that would have come down to soften the blow.
Mm. And I think the two others, just to wrap up my final views, I think if you say, right, finish season, but you know when, I think we have no idea how many waves of this we're going to have. And I think to end the season with the points per game, as has already been said, really, I think that it's like an imaginary crystal ball, and I think that opens up all manner of legal issues.
100%. Especially that, it does affect Villa more than most legally, because that match had enormous implications financially for both Villa at one end of the table and potentially Sheffield United, because if they'd have beaten Villa with their game in hand, they'd have gone into fifth, and therefore, of course, with Man City being banned from the Champions League, they would have got the fourth Champions League place.
I also think it gives the league, with VAR having been such a crock of absolute shit half of the time, I think it gives the league an out.
Get out of jail card.
Out of jail card.
100%. But I just think the Premier League...
They will make a decision that no one will expect.
They will bend over backwards to try to finish this league, though.
Oh, because you'll never hear the end of it from the Scousers.
I think the biggest problem is then what the fuck happens to next season?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You could write the season off today, you know, in April or nearly May, and they're talking about, well, we want to get the season started in August, and that's fine.
How are the players going to socially distance? I don't understand.
But we don't know where we're going to be come August. It could be that you actually have to start next season behind closed doors anyway.
Well, one theory was, right, we pause this season and we continue it at the same point next year. So in actual fact, you don't really have a 2021 season. Now, that's basing on the hope that actually everything will be all right this time next year.
I just think that football needs to be so low down the list of priorities that it's just, until you can safely put all parties involved in that stadium, don't do it.
There's an interesting situation about one thing I didn't mention about the players' cuts. I mean, the players will want to play because they're they're not getting their goal bonuses, they're not getting their win bonuses, so they're losing out on money, mm-hmm. even though they're getting paid a lot of money. So that would be why they would probably say yes to any madcap scheme the Premier League will put forward about playing behind closed doors, you know, putting them in camps, in hotels, away from their families to finish this season over a month. I mean, yes, it does kind of present some entertainment for people in lockdown, but that's all it is. When you boil it down, it's morally irresponsible.
Mm-hmm. Of course it isn't. And especially if you, for example, were to, I don't know, say the 1st of May, just as a ballpark number, had a round of matches. All players went out on the field and were fine. A week later, a player complains about symptoms again. All of a sudden, you're going to have to shut it down again. I just think if you nip it in the bud now, you make a clean break and allow yourself to plan longer term. You can allow things like, you know, things through May, June and July for the curve to, in theory, follow the same patterns as it has elsewhere. And you can reach a point where, come August, you can go, right, where do we stand? We have a much clearer picture and now we can plan, rather than just sort of trying to rush everything back and be treated as a priority when it just isn't.
Right. I think there's not much more to really add to that. But yeah, it's you know, a lot of most fans will take it from how does it affect their club, and that will be the basis of their judgment. But it needs to be cleaner. But I think the devil in this situation will be the
money.
All those big money contracts that the Premier League have to try to come to some solution. You can understand the motivation because it's one hell of a big fucking mess, and they need to clear it up somehow. Good luck with that.
Well, it's the same plot. I mean, I'd be interested to know where the TV sort of deals stand in things like America in terms of, you know, the big, the enormous NBA contracts, NFL, you know, the baseball season will be basically written off.
And they were very quick to pause their seasons, weren't they, NBA?
The baseball guys, they were in pre-season, weren't they? They were in spring training, they just cut it dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's a good position to be in. The NFL hasn't started yet, so they're in a good position as well. They can react.
Yeah, and cricket, you know, cricket's not, they're not doing anything till the 1st of July. And this is a sport, you know, county championship cricket, you're generally playing in a half-empty stadium anyway.
Yeah, so it's irrelevant.
But in terms of a sport that, you know, these they're furloughing players, and these guys are not on footballer contracts. They need to play to earn. You know, and you look at further down the division, Joe, these are clubs that they have to, you know, who will be the first victim of all this? I mean, you know, you look across the city at our not-so-illustrious rivals, and it's like they were absolutely in the shit before all of this. You know, they were sacking, you know, they were, you know, letting go a lot of members of staff because they simply couldn't afford to run the business.
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily them, but I think we'll be losing a few clubs. The crisis club was a term being used a lot of the time. So if you're in a crisis before this happened, imagine your chances of surviving now. Right, anyway, let's finish on a lighter note. So we're all up for voiding this season, and let's see how this plays out. Anyway, now it's time for some light relief.
And, yes.
A new section.
This is good.
This needs a theme tune.
Oh, I'll just steal the theme tune from Pitchfork Music, where the simple idea comes from. So, simple notion, and that's what I like about it. We'll go through three players, and the discussion on each of them will be underrated or overrated.
Oh, it wasn't so much of a short list. We were.
We could make like a 2-year series out of this.
This could run for the next 100 episodes.
Yeah, this would be continual, where we'll just randomly select three players.
These are good. Three good randoms. Sit tight, folks.
Right, let's go for the first one. This was my pick. I'm throwing Nigel Riococca. Oh. Underrated or overrated?
Definitely overrated. 8.5 million pounds for a man. For a man who, who was bought as one of the up-and-coming England captaining, rising box-to-box footballer who we turned into a frigging right-back. Who looked like he'd been...
Let's just go back to his... We were looking... He was like this young captain of West Ham, leading them in this gallant battle against
England,
Liverpool.
England under-21 captain, wasn't he, as well?
FA Cup final, Mr. Box-to-Box, looking amazing. Mr. Box-to-Box scored one goal in over 100 games for Villa.
He did win the Peace Cup, though.
Oh... Yeah.
when we were choosing these names, I said, I always remember a game against Chelsea where when Chelsea were good. And Villa suddenly, I think it ended 0-0, but there was a break and Rio Coca was put through on the halfway line and he was clean on Czech. It was 1-1. And I just sat down and turned to my friend, and because, you know, he's got to run the half a pitch, so he got a bit of
You'd
time.
You'd seen it all before at this
and
point.
And I just looked at my friend who's not a Villa fan. I said, he's not going to score. He's going, he's through. And I was the most unexcited I've ever been when it came to a Villa player clean on goal, 1-1. He's not going to score.
You were more excited at the prospect of, oh, we might get a corner here.
Yeah, that's the best case scenario here is we're going to get a corner.
It was as though Nigel Rielkoeke was wearing corrective shoes when he was playing football. Like they were designed in Minecraft or something.
It's
like
two
that.
Left feet, wasn't it?
But I always thought we... Because I watched that game, West Ham versus Liverpool, and he was fucking good.
Yes.
He had his moments, but just not very many.
I thought 8.5 million, maybe a little bit of overspend. That's a bit of hype. That's hype money. Potential, you know, it's for his potential. And then...
Oh, I was delighted to sign Rielkoeke.
Yeah, so was I.
Little did we know.
Then, like, O'Neill tried him as a defensive mid, and then he was like, oh, shit, this isn't working out. Let's... try to convert Petrov to a defensive mid instead.
He always looked more and more forlorn as well, didn't he, Rielkoeke, as the years went on? He always just looked like...
But he was quite bright, if I imagine rightly. Then, I mean, he had an interesting career in terms of travelling because he ended up going all over the MLS and then ended up at Milton Keynes Dons, where I don't think he actually played.
He was on trial, wasn't he?
I think he's still available as a free agent. He's been a free agent the last couple of years, I think.
Where did he score still his active. Goal?
Wrexham, Dan.
But,
oh, dear.
I mean, I'm going overrated as well. But this sums him up. When he was captain of England's under-21s, and it was the 2007 under-21s European Championships, and in the semi-final they were playing the hosts, Holland. And this, because of his age, this would be his last game for England under-21s. And he got a second booking, which meant he was going to miss Alain Gascoigne. He was going to miss the final. So, first of all, you know, this is Rielkoeke's career.
At that point.
His career in a nutshell. This is what is going to happen to him later once he's with the Villa. So this is his last ever game. He's going to miss the final because he's got his second booking. Anyway, the game goes to penalties. Holland win. I remember this because it was just everybody was scoring. Well, not everybody.
Obviously.
Holland won 13-12 because everybody was scoring. Guess who missed the penalty? Rielkoeke.
In his square shoes.
It's square shoes. So I think, Chris, did you say, what was your verdict, sorry?
Overrated.
Yeah, that's unanimous, overrated. Nigel Rielkoeke, overrated. Right, next one. Should we go, are we going to go for Chris's or Dan's nomination?
I think I'll go next. Mine right. is a little-known Arab-Israeli footballer, Najwan Gharib. Overrated. Underrated.
Tell us more of this player, because I can barely remember him. I think this is when I was out the country in Australia for a couple of years. This was John Gregory era, was it not?
So, like all promising footballers and Jesus, they start in Nazareth. And
that's where he was born, wasn't it?
Yeah. He came through the youth ranks at Maccabi Nazareth. And having caught the eye, he was described as by our then club scout, Ross McLaren, as being the best left-back he had ever seen. Well, the best left back he had ever seen went on to play 5 games for Aston Villa. I have scoured. I can't find these 5 games. I'm not.
I don't think he started once, did he? He's the kind of player who might get a game in the early rounds of like the Coca-Cola Cup or something.
There's some good background on this guy. I mean, he joined us in the 99-2000 season, paid £1 million.
Did we?
He's one of the John Gregory signings where you go, oh, ooh.
Was it one of the brown paper envelope signings?
Well, I think so.
In the same league as like Fabio Ferraresi and people like that.
He's 1/8 of a Bosco Balaban, put it that way. And... and I think he goes some way to say that Alan Wright kept him out of the team.
Oh, he didn't like...
He had a scathing attack, didn't he, when he left? Blamed Gregory's proclivity towards the regular Alan Wright for his lack of first-team opportunities, moaning that if Alan Wright signed for Hapoel Haifa, he would not get game time.
Now, this is all a bit odd for me because that he was scathing of Gregory then.
But what did he say? He also said he is good only defensively, and yet he is godlike to John Gregory.
Which is weird because Gurriev went on to be John Gregory's assistant a few years later when he was managing in Israel.
Yeah, I think they had a timeshare or something together. I reckon they're just mates.
Yeah, so it's a bit weird. Bit weird. I'm sure everything was above board.
So I think he's underrated.
I think he's just not rated.
I think I just like the way that he slammed into Alan Wright and said he is good only defensively, yet he is godlike to John Gregory. I just love the bitterness of that. So I'm going underrated.
Alan Wright scored some worldies, so I'm going not even rated. Just
no, you got to go under or over. That's the whole idea.
I'm going to give him a polite under because who the hell knew?
Dan, underrated or overrated?
Underrated. This is the classic Villa signing. Perhaps a bit like Rio Coco, where if you imagine a scene of like a watering hole for animals, it looks serene, but there's mud all around the watering hole. And Villa are the beautiful, delicious water. And all these players who arrive and go, they're pretty good. But then they get stuck in the mud. And then they get fossilised in the mud. And then they rot in the mud.
Yeah. But yeah, I can't remember him being a £1 million signing.
He was great on Championship Manager that year, though.
But he wasn't in Villa's team. He was in Spurs' team. That's a fact for you.
Right, let's go on to the third and final underrated or overrated. Somebody else who costs just over $1 million, $1.35 million. Big Ron Atkinson signing. Mr. John Fashanu.
Mr. Awooger himself.
Underrated or overrated for the Villa?
Overrated.
Mind-blowingly overrated.
I can't believe we had John Fashanu playing football in our team.
He did actually score on his debut, so it started kind of well for him, and then just went gradually downhill.
He got to wear the mullet kit as well. So you've got this situation where you got like, right, we've got Atkinson, we've got Saunders. York. What else do we need? I think he got him because Villa were turning into a bit of a soft touch, were they not? Mm. And they didn't really have that.
Who did we buy that summer? John Fashanu and Phil King, was it?
Yeah, which didn't stink of much ambition, did it?
John Fashanu.
It reeked.
John Fashanu.
Fucking hell. But I think he scored 3 goals. How many games did he play?
About 15. I remember one of the goals, it was, I think it was QPR. And the cameraman was so surprised, he didn't even video the goal. He just cut to the celebration. Oh, Fashanu scored. Oh, who knew?
But he was in the England squad before.
That's unbelievable as well.
I mean, these were the years of the Steve Bull and John Fashanu playing centre forward.
Carlton Palmer.
I mean, it's not exactly vintage
this
England.
Yeah, Graham Taylor. Do I not like that era?
Fashanu was not very cultured as a footballer, in my memories. And
well, he wasn't a footballer, really, was he?
He was an entertainer, David, as it turned out.
And a bloody good one as well, I might add. Dear. Saturday nights with the big pointy fingers singing Another One Bites the Dust.
I do remember his injury at Villa Park, though, it was a lunging challenge after... our memories fail us, but we think it might have been Giggs, don't we?
I think so. He was a bit of a gazer, wasn't it? He tried to snap Giggs in half, and in doing so, ruptured his cruciate ligament, wasn't it? I think, and never played again.
Thankfully.
So I'm going to go. I'll go overrated as well because he was a legend in his own lifetime,
in his own mind. Yes,
yeah. A legend in his own lunchbox.
John Fashanu.
Anyway, so will anybody who wants to throw suggestions for underrated, overrated, please do it via the Mad Few group or on social media. The Twitter account for the podcast is at My Old Man Said. Right, let's finish on it's just this younger generation of Villa fans the social media fans calling everybody a legend. You know, a lot of it's PR. If you keep putting your face there, then people, you know, the club call you a legend a couple of times, and suddenly, you know, if enough people say it, it becomes true. But you know, what is a real legend? Similar to underrated or overrated. We need a title for this, but I mean, legend of fraud's a bit harsh.
I like
But so at the end of every episode, we're going to throw up a good Villa player who may be considered a legend to others, or but let's say a good Villa player, because let's finish on a positive note, and we will give him a grade between legend, hero, which is still pretty good, but just not quite legend status, or a cult favourite, which kind of covers a multitude of sins, really. So, first one, my friend, Martin Larsson. Now...
How many podcasts have we done, David, now? And the amount of time... I think I've been present for most of the 150 or so.
Martin Larsson...
This has come up once or twice.
It always comes up. Martin Larsson is... And I have to blink. People call him a legend, which very good centre back. I liked him. I liked his application, and I was always very happy when he was playing because most of the time he wasn't because he was injured. But with most sick-nate players, they become frustrating. I mean, Dalian Atkinson was very frustrating. And he's another legend nowadays. But so with Larsson, he's still heralded. But, you know, people talk to Larsson, and most of the time they're talking about when he was injured, which doesn't really make you a legend at Villa, does it? I was injured a lot. I was more injured.
You're basically talking about one very good season he had, wasn't it, when he was with Melbourne?
Yeah, and we were very happy that he managed to get through that season. And you think, oh, well...
What a player we might have here.
Because the only reason he ended up at Villa was because he was good... was his injury record was astonishing. And nobody big time wanted to take a chance of getting a crop player. Well, Villa are in a position where this is a player we probably wouldn't, because, you know, we got him from AC Milan, we probably wouldn't normally get. But let's roll the dice on this one. It's similar to Ron Villar, but Larsson's, you know, Larsson's a cut above him, I would venture. Yeah. But he's somebody who had a bit of an... Well, he always went missing at Christmas, if I remember rightly. I always joked that he had his second job was... He had to be a Santa Claus in a grotto in Holland. So he was in pantomime. He'd always go missing around Christmas. But anyway, Larsson, where would you put him? Would you consider him a Villa legend?
No,
he's cult favourite, isn't he? If we're really
He's cult favourite.
The club. I mean, a lot of you would have seen the framed Villa 11 on the side of the Holt, which the club are now starting to get to grips with how they're going to fill those frames for the, you know, greatest ever Villa 11. The fan consultation group's been contacted in the first instance to put together and submit a short list of 10. 10 players for each position, and we're looking at it as the standard 4-4-2. So you got two strikers, left midfield, you know, right midfield, two centres, and then obviously the back four. So they want each of the fan consultation group members to put forward 10 candidates, and I've spoken to the patrons already to get them to send in suggestions for the list that Mayo Manced will put forward. But there's three criteria. One is you have to have played over 100 games for Villa. Larsson around 90, I think. So strike one. Two, you must have won something significant with Villa. Larsson didn't. And number three, all played in like a promoted team, which Larsson hasn't. So he wouldn't even get in on the shortlist for the greatest ever Villa team. So that suggests to me that you couldn't give him legend status. And hero, he wasn't really a hero to the extent he was more frustrating because he was injured more and he wasn't really helping the team a lot of the time. I mean, I'm glad he had that great moment against Ajax, the goal. And also his celebration against Everton, when fans like to see, you know, passion and commitment. But yeah, I would go with cult favourite as well out of the three potential labels: legend, hero, cult favourite.
I'd say so, just because, you know, for a very good player, and he did chip in with goals as well. He was a goal-scoring defender.
Yeah.
But and from when I've seen him interviewed, and he always came across a really nice guy. I actually bumped into him in Sainsbury's local a couple of hours after the 5-1 win against Blues. Him and Melberg were doing their shopping about 2 hours after the game, which was mad.
What did they buy?
Avocados.
God, it was worth hanging on to listen to this podcast just to get to this insight.
Yep. But I just think because there's so much of what could have been with his career.
Did he use his Nectar card?
Yeah. How many points did he have?
Enough to get it off his bloody shopping, I bet. But because his career will essentially be a lot of what could have been.
Did he buy any beer?
Can hope so. Nah, they're
carry
they're
on,
probably
carry
just
on.
The,
sorry,
he's on the vodka. Yeah, because of his injuries.
Was he buying ibuprofen?
Yeah, he was in pain. Yeah, he was on the steroid injections. Yeah.
Sorry, we're talking about Larson. Okay.
Larson's shopping basket. Now, there's a segment.
So, cult favourite. Anyway, just on an aside, to wrap the show off, Martin Larson, overrated or underrated?
Oh.
Overrated.
Oh.
I think it's smack bang in the middle.
Chris Bird, how many times have I told you the whole idea is that either you go underrated or overrated? That is the idea. There's no fence to sit on.
This is horrible, this is.
Ooh. Come on, Chris Bird, commit. Which way are you going?
I'm going to say ever so slightly under.
Oh, slightly. There's no shades.
No, it's ever so slightly under, just because of what
underrated. Yeah, no, that's a good point, actually. I mean, you look at it that way. Underrated, I think, is, especially when you're talking to me, it's like, actually, I think Larson's underrated after what Michael's just said about him.
I mean, his shopping basket alone has gone up in Dan's estimation.
Yeah,
I think.
It's interesting. I mean, it's always made me laugh that we have all the players that come through Villa Park, and you know, I think it's because Larson was always so good with the fans, wasn't he? He's a good communicator, and he's played that side of it well. But no one feels the same amount of love towards like Ronnie Johnson or anyone like that, do they? That essentially the same, essentially the same creature. I'm going to say underrated, ever so slightly underrated. I'm going to say.
You just think if he'd have stayed fit another season,
if he'd had legs,
that defensive partnership would have stayed.
He had a pair of legs, yeah.
Yeah, but you think, you know, a couple of years down the line, like that, you know, the year we got to the cup final, if he'd have still had that centre back pairing with the forwards that had developed, there we'd have had a hell of a team.
I do hate the players that bring up the if word,
but he really is in recent years, a really big one.
Who would have been deputising for him when he was injured? Who would have been the player playing alongside Malberg?
Zat night.
One of the years, the last year Larson was there, it would have been Zat night before
there
that.
You go. That's why he's overrated.
Who would it have been before that?
Cahill, Ridgewell got a bit of game action.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah,
Carlos Cuella.
Yeah, it was because when he came, it was O'Leary who brought him in, wasn't it?
Yeah. Right, anyway, we've just mentioned a few names that no doubt we will see in
Phil
future
Bardsley.
Underrated and overrated sections.
Najran Gereyeb.
You'll never beat him. But it's a good evergreen section.
Fernando Nelson.
For pandemic times, so it works quite well. So anyway, we will see how this 2019/20 season does eventually end. Please do subscribe on the podcast so you will get notifications of when it pops up. Please do buy a mug so you can drink, as Donald Trump suggests.
drink Dettol.
Drink some Dettol from it.
That's one way to end the football season.
So no, please do not do that. But please do check out a mug and help us. It'll help support the show if you do purchase one. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining me.
It's been truly a pleasure.
A pleasure.
Truly a pleasure.
Nice to have you back, Daniel.
That's all right. It's good to be here.
Do enjoy your weeks ahead. And until next time, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. We lost Dave.
David?
Oh, dear.
Dave?
Right, sorry, I'm just doing something else.
Oh, great. See ya.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.